Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida House is preparing for sharp cuts to get the budget in order, and it could fall heavily on programs that help the state's neediest.
It became very apparent early on that the bulk of our reductions would need to come from Medicaid and focus primarily on how we compensate providers.
After fees started to skyrocket, Florida lawmakers are considering a plan to shut down a state worker charity.
Isn't the point of outsourcing and privatizing vendors like this to save money? How did we get here?
And state attorneys and public defenders are being targeted in an effort to expand the legislature's impeachment power. Plus, the latest in ongoing efforts to tackle the opioid abuse epidemic. That's ahead on Capitol Report. I'm Lynn Hatter in for Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Welcome to tonight's show. House budget subcommittees are unveiling their ideas for spending cuts. Nick Evans reports House leaders ordered each panel to develop a list of potential reductions in light of a grim budget outlook.
Florida is racing toward a fiscal cliff based on the most recent projections from state economists. That board meets again Friday to come up with its final estimate for budgeting purposes. But if nothing changes, there's less than $150 million available. To put that in perspective, it's less than 0.2% of the overall $82 billion budget. To get the books in line, House Budget Chief Carlos Trujillo is flirting with austerity measures.
All subcommittees were assigned reduction targets. The subcommittees have met and discussed the target amounts and ways to achieve the targeted savings.
With GOP leadership loath to raise taxes, there's little choice but make big cuts. Trujillo assigned each committee two outlooks, with recurring and non-recurring reduction targets. When it comes to higher education, Seminole Republican Representative Larry Ahern is suggesting particularly drastic measures.
In reaching the total of $266 million recurring cut, we will provide no new funding to universities. This decision will save us $161 million.
Under a gentler proposal, Ahern would give universities $70 million, still about $90 million less than they were expecting. To justify the move, he notes universities, unlike state agencies, hang on to unspent funds, and they're sitting on about $800 million. But actually, he wants a piece of that too.
In order to meet this $38 million non-recurring target, we would recommend that the universities be required to use approximately 5% of their fund balance to hold themselves harmless from this one-time cut.
None of this will be popular with Senate President Joe Negron. One of the Stewart Republicans' highest priorities this year is devoting new funding to higher education. Meanwhile, Miami Republican Representative Manny Diaz called pre-K to 12 programs to visit his committee and defend their funding. 16 didn't show, and each one got the axe. Things are also pretty dire for health care, where House members envision the biggest cuts. Here's Stanford Republican Jason Broder.
It became very apparent early on that the bulk of our reductions would need to come from Medicaid and focus primarily on how we compensate providers.
Even in the milder exercise, the cuts are staggering.
The long-range financial outlook recommended a hospital provider rate increase of $55.2 million based on past actions by the legislature. I would not recommend funding the increase. That was also a subcommittee recommendation. I would also recommend a reduction in hospital inpatient and or outpatient reimbursements of approximately $220.6 million in general revenue. The reduction would be achieved.
The irony is Broder's proposal comes amid a broader conversation about paltry Medicaid reimbursements driving some providers away from serving lower-income Floridians. So much so, the House is reopening old and contentious debates over scope of practice. allowing less qualified providers to perform more procedures to boost access. Budget Chair Trujillo warns the process is only beginning, and the proposals are only guideposts. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
After the overhead costs to run a state-sanctioned employee charity rose to take up nearly half the contributions made, Florida workers and lawmakers became frustrated, even outraged. Regan McCarthy tells us officials are now considering a plan to shut the fund down.
Orlando Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith says the current situation makes no sense.
How did we, as a state, land in a place where we privatized the vendor for collecting these contributions via payroll deduction? I think we ended up with a vendor that's out of state, and they were charging these exorbitant fees. Isn't the point of outsourcing and privatizing vendors like this to save money? How did we get here?
The Department of Management Services oversees the giving campaign. Secretary Chad Popple says part of that answer is shrinking contributions from employees.
We have tried our very best at the agency to drive down the cost of running the campaign and doing the accounting and the back office functions, but the contributions have declined so rapidly. Again, as we stated this year, we took in $280,000 in pledges. I was going to have to spend $180,000 in fiscal agent duties, and that's the lowest those fees have ever been. But that's an unacceptable percentage. So I suspended the campaign this year. I didn't feel comfortable spending that amount of money.
But Pace Republican Representative J.R. Williamson says that's not because people are giving less. They're just changing where and how they give.
This is the 21st century. People are using mobile apps like Venmo to donate, or they're going to that charitable organization's website and they're giving through that website, which that charitable donation then has a third party who regulates that. And I guarantee you they do it for less than the percentages that we've been paying. People just aren't giving through payroll deductions.
With that in mind, Jacksonville Republican Representative Clay Yarborough is pushing a bill that would put an end to state-sanctioned giving. It also includes protections, Yarborough says, are needed to ensure employees aren't hit by an onslaught of new asks once the state giving program goes away.
The prohibition would be on organizations having someone, say, outside your office door that are, you know, trying to solicit employees during work hours in the workplace.
The bill passed the House Government Accountability Committee Thursday with an amendment dubbed the Thinmint Amendment. It would ensure coworkers aren't prohibited from talking casually with one another about charities they're involved in or supporting. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
A House panel voted Thursday to put a measure on the ballot that would give the legislature the power to impeach state attorneys and public defenders. Jim Ash tells us Republican Jackie Toledo of Tampa thinks those public servants need another layer of oversight.
Florida's Constitution gives the legislature the power to impeach the governor, the lieutenant governor, cabinet members, Supreme Court justices, and judges for alleged misdemeanors. Conspicuously absent from that list of elected officials are Florida's 20 state attorneys and public defenders. And Toledo thinks that's wrong.
With current House leadership wanting to aim at having more transparency in government, this provides additional oversight over this portion of the judicial branch.
It's also a matter of fairness, Toledo told the Public Ethics and Integrity Committee.
This would also be leveling the playing field between state attorneys, public defenders, and judges who are subject to impeachment.
But Democrats on the committee, including Representative David Richardson of Miami Beach, appeared worried about a hidden agenda. For example, former Jacksonville public defender Matt Shirk was embroiled in ethics and grand jury investigations throughout his 8 years in office, but couldn't be investigated by the Florida bar because of his elected status.
Do we have any instances of state's attorneys or public defenders that may be in need of corrective action, or where's this coming from?
Toledo insists the legislation isn't targeting a specific case. Pasco County Public Defender Bob Dillinger says Toledo's claim about leveling the judicial playing field doesn't hold water. He's worried about giving a vindictive prosecutor a tool to get rid of a rival public defender.
Feud may be too strong of a word, but one state attorney is upset with their elected public defender. they file a misdemeanor, here we go.
The measure passed 15-1, but faces two more House committees. A Senate companion has yet to move. Even if the House and Senate approve the measure, voters would have to give it their okay in November. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Florida is reeling from an opioid epidemic that spans young and old, rural and urban. State lawmakers are once again trying to reduce overdose deaths and prevent addiction. Kate Payne has that story.
For many, what can begin with knee surgery or back pain can explode into a full-blown addiction. Joanne Richter of Broward County saw her brother's disease spiral out of control, and she thinks doctors didn't do enough to prevent his death.
He has, for many years, been able to acquire prescriptions, 90 pills at a time, no monitoring of those prescriptions being written by numerous physicians and also being filled by numerous drugstores by just going from one to another.
And as doctors crack down on overprescribing, patients are increasingly turning to a cheaper high, like heroin or fentanyl. Jane Colbert saw the cycle of drug abuse as a neonatal nurse. She says many heroin addictions began with a doctor's visit.
8 out of 10 heroin addicts started with a prescription opiate, a pain pill, and this is a physician-prescribed epidemic.
That's why lawmakers want to update the state's prescription drug monitoring program. That's a central database that tracks high-risk prescriptions and how often they're being doled out. Meanwhile, Fort Pierce Democratic Representative Larry Lee wants physicians to connect overdose patients with substance abuse treatment.
And we hope that this is the foundation that we could build upon to deal with this crisis that we face.
And Naples Republican Representative Bob Rommel wants medical practitioners to report on drug overdose patients. Gender, age, date, and location would be included in a database, but patients' names would be removed to protect their privacy. Lawmakers say the data will help public health and public safety officials track overdose hotspots. Heather Davidson represents the Broward County United Way.
Last year in Broward, our overdose rate jumped 230% just in 1 year. And that's not unusual for the other counties in Florida.
Representative Daisy Baez, a Coral Gables Democrat, was an emergency room social worker for 10 years. She wants lawmakers to balance the need to collect data with the workload of ER doctors.
We certainly don't want to put onerous requests or demands on staff that's already taxed to the limit.
Democratic Representative Wenge Newton of St. Petersburg says there's still a disconnect between addicts and first responders. The representative's brother served as a firefighter for 20 years and saw the fear of prosecution firsthand.
They were almost less likely to confide in him because they were for fear of what would happen with what they shared.
Under Florida law, overdose patients won't be prosecuted when they seek medical treatment. And Good Samaritan drug users are immune from charges as well when they call 911 for another overdose victim. But the rising number of deaths implies that message isn't reaching everyone. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Still to come on Capitol Report, Florida's troubled corrections agency could get a pay boost.
When we were there, you have to walk in between the yellow lines because if you don't, you can commonly, feces is thrown at them and all kinds of things.
And even if lawmakers mandate recess for elementary schools, that doesn't mean students will get it.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Senate lawmakers say Florida's prison system is in crisis. That's the consensus after a presentation by Department of Corrections Secretary Julie Jones. Florida's prisons are crumbling, and the state's having problems recruiting guards. As Sarah Mueller reports, Jones is pushing for pay bumps.
Tallahassee Democrat Bill Montford says he's concerned about corrections staffing shortages because his district includes 9 prisons. 17% of prison jobs in Northeast Florida are empty, the highest rate in the state. Corrections Secretary Julie Jones says current prison staffers are young, inexperienced, and tired. Corrections officers are working a lot of overtime, which is costing the state more money than fully staffing the system.
So in summary, I'm not retaining experienced staff, which is important relative, Senator Mumford, to the safety and security of those facilities. In some places, I can't hire.
But Jones says staffing up the prisons isn't in this year's budget. It's just the pay increases. Starting salary for corrections officers is about $30,900 a year. Jones wants to nudge it to $33,500. Starting pay for probation officers would increase to about $36,800. She also wants higher pay for those working in mental health units and hiring bonuses for prisons with high vacancy rates. Several senators are expressing concerns about the short staffing in mental health units. Democratic Senator Lauren Book says she visited the Lake Correctional Institution just north of Claremont. The prison has a large population of mentally ill inmates. That makes staff interactions more stressful because mentally ill inmates are more likely to act out.
When we were there, you have to walk in between the yellow lines because if you don't, you can commonly, you know, feces is thrown at them and all kinds of things.
There are 10 inpatient mental health facilities in the correction system. Disabilities Rights Florida filed a lawsuit in 2015 alleging violations of disabled prisoners' rights. The Justice Department joined the case against the department in January, and Jones says they're in mediation. Senate Appropriations Chairman Jack LaValla says relief is on the way.
The department made a strong case for an increase in wages for correctional officers, and the Senate has heard that, and I believe we're going to try to help them.
Jones says she hopes better pay will help her compete for talent with local companies and other governmental agencies. She says workers are leaving as companies pop up along the Interstate 10 corridor that pay more. Counties also steal corrections officers for their jails by offering hiring bonuses, and that's led to a 95% turnover of experienced correction officers and probation officers. Jones says 15 prisons have high vacancy rates. If the Department of Corrections can get fully staffed, Jones wants to expand a pilot educational and vocational program. Becoming fully staffed could take a while, but previous recruitment efforts have helped bridge the gap. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Gun control advocates joined Florida Democrats at the Capitol Thursday, calling on the Republican-controlled legislature to hear their gun safety bills. Sasha Cordner reports.
For Brandon Wolf, it's still hard to sleep at night.
I still wake up screaming, covered in sweat. 9 months ago, I hid in a bathroom stall, the smell of blood and smoke burning my nose, while a man strolled through the doors of Pulse Nightclub and opened fire. I listened to gunshot after gunshot. I stared death in the face.
The 28-year-old is a survivor of the Pulse Nightclub massacre in Orlando. The worst mass shooting in modern American history left 49 people dead and dozens more injured. Wolf's two friends, Drew Linenen and Juan Guerrero, were among those killed by the gunman.
In just 1 minute, he got off 30 rounds. And while I sat frozen on that floor, 13 of those rounds killed my best friends. So I hope you can forgive me for not understanding where we finally draw the line. When is enough enough?
Referring to other shootings around the U.S. like Sandy Hook, Wolf says it's time for the Florida legislature to act by giving gun control reforms a committee hearing.
Don't get me wrong. I know that background checks aren't a cure-all, and that gun reform is truly a sticky subject. But when it's our friends and families being targeted for your target practice, it's high time that we stopped throwing up our hands and crossing our fingers and hoping for luck. We need real change.
So far, bills supported by the National Rifle Association, which could increase access or use of firearms, have had hearings. One making changes to Florida Stand Your Ground law passed the Senate Wednesday.
I am disappointed that we passed that legislation, but it was taken up, it was heard, it was argued, and the members were allowed to vote. We would simply like that opportunity with our gun safety legislation.
That's Fort Lauderdale Senator Gary Farmer, one of several Democrats who have filed gun reforms that have yet to get hearings. Farmer's bill would require background checks for purchased firearms at gun shows.
There is no requirement for a background check to be conducted at a gun show. So, if you're a domestic violence offender If you're someone with a checkered criminal past, if you're somebody who's mentally imbalanced, what are you going to do? You're going to wait and go to a gun show so that you can purchase a firearm and not have to undergo any background check. That is simply wrong.
There's also a bill by Miami Senator Daphne Campbell to require potential concealed weapons license holders to undergo a mental health evaluation.
Can you imagine? I send my child to school and I got one phone call. My child is gone by someone who's sick mentally. No one knew, but he has a gun permit. Simple, it's a simple bill. To say, before I give you a gun permit, I need to know if you're sick or not.
And if the bills don't get a hearing by the GOP-controlled legislature this year, Florida Democratic lawmakers vow they'll keep filing them year after year. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Now for something a little less controversial. Recess used to be something you could count on in school, but not anymore. Florida lawmakers are weighing a bill that would require 20 minutes of recess 5 days a week for elementary schools. But the act of mandating recess may not guarantee it. And as WLRN's Rowan Moore Garrity tells us, even when school districts have policies on the books, plenty of students don't get their playtime.
Every afternoon when school lets out at Devonair K-8 Center in Miami, Angel Contreras brings her 5-year-old son to the playground next door.
I think he needs to go to recess every day, but I feel like at the first opportunity that someone misbehaves, that's it.
Amy Ledesma says it's the same way in her daughter's class.
She says if one kid acts up, the whole class has to stay inside.
Miami-Dade County and Broward are two of the only school districts in Florida that do require some recess. Both districts' policies say you can't use recess as a way to punish kids. But parents and teachers say that's exactly what's happening. From wealthy zip codes like Pinecrest Elementary's to schools next door to public housing. And some kids aren't getting recess at all.
I'm 8 years old. My school is right around the corner. And
I met Luis Martinez after his mother picked him up from Lenora B. Smith Elementary.
And when's the last time you had recess?
When I was in another state. Everybody's pretty much used to not having recess now.
This has become an issue that has risen to such a level that it seems that unless there's a state mandate, it won't happen.
That brings us to State Senator Annie Terry Flores and her Senate Bill 78.
Parents say, and I agree, that sometimes they've taken the fun out of school.
Flores credits advocacy by so-called recess moms with getting her to introduce a recess bill in the first place. WLRN called and emailed principals at a half dozen schools where parents voiced complaints about recess. None agreed to an interview. Anna Fusco is president of the Broward Teachers Union. She was an elementary school teacher until last year. She says sometimes schools schedule recess, but it doesn't actually happen.
Because they didn't get to finish something in math or science or, you know, ELA.
English language arts. Classroom schedules have become more and more tightly managed. There are guides that spell out the lesson of the day, standardized tests that track goals for the year, and there's software struggling students are supposed to use to catch up.
A kindergarten teacher said to me that I haven't taken my babies out to recess in months because there's so much for them to need to get done, and they don't even take the FSA.
The statewide test for 3rd to 10th graders. Schools around the country have cut back on recess since 2001. That's when a federal law, No Child Left Behind, mandated standardized testing in all 50 states. Fusco worries that even making recess state law might not change much. For school districts, so much hinges on how students do on the FSA. Teacher pay, some funding, even property values.
At the end of the year, when they're talking about student test scores attached to teachers' evaluations, and they've got cities breathing down their necks of why do we have D and F schools in our communities? What's going on?
Stephanie Ehring says she sees the cost of cutting recess every time she visits her second grader's school in West Kendall.
To me, these kids are wound up so tight they're about to snap.
She says she appreciates how creative the teachers are in trying to break up the day inside the classroom.
Like, so they'll stand in front of their desk and do Zumba for kids, or they'll do yoga or meditation. But it's like they need to run around and not have you telling them how to do it.
On paper, Erring says her daughter's schedule shows recess for 15 minutes a week on Fridays. Recently, she went to ask school administrators about it.
Did you know that they haven't had recess at all this year? Not once? And they were, like, really surprised.
Erring says they told her skipping recess violates district policy, and they vowed to look into it. 2 weeks later, though, her second grader says still no recess. I'm Rowan Moore Garrity in Miami.
Finally tonight, it's spring break season, and that means a lot of extra highway traffic on Florida roads. Tom Flanagan reports the State Department of Transportation is beefing up its free app to help travelers get around easier and more safely.
If you live in a big city, you're probably used to hearing this sort of thing on the radio or on a TV newscast.
Goldenrod Road and Pershing Avenue. Right now, Goldenrod northbound, all lanes are blocked.
But for the vast bulk of Florida, especially outlying rural areas, up-to-the-minute traffic reports can be hard to find. But in late 2005, the Florida Department of Transportation set up Florida 511. When callers dialed 511, they would be linked to such information as road construction delays and major accident locations. In the past dozen years, Florida 511 spokesman Stephen Abel says that capability has been expanded enormously, especially with the advent of the system's phone app, which has brought real two-way interaction.
I put in my home-to-work route. I tell it I commute from like 7:30 to 8:30 in the morning, and I get a text message or an email letting me know whenever there's a crash on my route. And with this new system, we also have accurate travel times. So with every notification that I get of an incident, I'll get the travel time.
And Abel says the system isn't just for everyday commuting.
If you're going on a trip, say it's just a one-time trip, you could say from here to like Walt Disney World or Panama City Beach, and you could tell it the days and times that you're traveling, and it'll tell you any information, whether it's a crash or a construction or congestion or severe weather or dense fog, and it will let that specific person know about that route and the travel times during the days and times that they select. So this is information that you'll be bombarded with. It's really the information when you want it and how you want it.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back tomorrow. Join us each weekday for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing 1.4 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades Restoration and Fish and Wildlife Conservation, the Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.